Good afternoon, Dr. Walt.
Good afternoon.
My name is Anthony Pantone. I'm the attorney for Dr. Zarnik. We haven't met before, have we, sir?
No, we haven't.
We haven't even spoken before.
That's correct.
Dr. Walt, do you agree that Tony Zarnik is a founder of Illumina?
Yes, I agree.
You've seen business publications on the part of Illumina describing Dr. Zarnik as a founder, have you not?
Yes, I have.
Have you seen Dr. Zarnik's offer letter where Illumina contractually agreed to recognize his founder status?
Your Honor, I'm going to object to the characterization of the offer letter.
Best evidence. Sustained. Letter speaks for itself.
Are you aware that Dr. Zarnik's offer has a provision with regard to his founder status?
Same objection.
Sustained.
Let's take a look at it. I didn't think we were going to have to use it, Judge.
I don't know whether or not the witness is aware of it. He's not disputing it. And the letter speaks for itself. I'm sure it's going to be submitted into evidence, I presume.
I believe it has already.
Okay.
Dr. Walt, did you become aware at some point in time that Illumina issued some public documents where Dr. Zarnik was described as something other than being a founder of Illumina?
It was brought to my attention, I believe, after things had been rectified.
When was it brought to your attention, sir?
I'm not sure exactly who told me. I think it was Dr. Stulpnagel told me that there had been, that Dr. Zarnik had been not, the word founder was not associated with his name in the offering document, and then it was corrected and added.
Did Dr. Stulpnagel tell you who corrected it and added it?
No, I don't believe so.
Did he tell you when that had occurred?
No, it was a minor issue. It was just informing me that that had taken place.
It was a minor issue to whom?
To me. It was simply, I was informed of it after everything had been resolved, so I wasn't even aware that it had been an issue. So once it was resolved, it didn't seem like it was worth spending a lot of time on.
You described earlier that when you had your breakfast meeting with Dr. Zarnik in February of 2000, you had thought that he hadn't been exhibiting the same type of passion for Illumina as he had exhibited earlier.
That's correct.
How and when did it first come to your attention that Dr. Zarnik, in the early stages of Illumina, was passionate about the company?
I could see the way he approached his... Whenever I was present during discussions when he was describing technology, he was very enthusiastic. When I had run into colleagues who had come into contact with Tony, they had said, you know, he was very excited about the company and about the opportunities that the company presented.
And timing-wise, when was it that you first believed Dr. Zarnik was not as passionate about Illumina as he had been earlier?
I would say that January Scientific Advisory Board meeting, he was very detached. He really did not contribute to the discussion, and he seemed to be very disengaged from both the discussion as well as the people who were working for him.
That was January of 2000?
Yes, that's correct.
That's after Jay Flatley had come on board as the company's new CEO.
That would be correct.
That's the first time you felt he showed something less than passion toward Illumina.
That was the first time that it was very clear.
You testified about one occasion, I believe, early on at Illumina, where you were at the office and Dr. Zarnik wasn't at his desk. It described his desk being neat and the computer shut down.
Yes.
When was that one occasion, sir?
I think that may have been around the same visit. I probably had come in the day before the SAB. No, I did not. It may have been at the board meeting then. It may have been at a board meeting right at the end of the day after the meeting. He was not at his desk.
Can you place an approximate date on that one occasion?
Well, it was probably, I would say it was kind of that January or February time frame.
Of 2000?
Yeah.
Where was Dr. Zarnik on that one occasion where you didn't see him at his desk?
I didn't say there was only one occasion where he wasn't at his desk. I was saying that that was a very pointed situation where it was 5 o'clock and everybody was working, and I knew he was there in the morning because I had said hello, we did our business, and then I came out and he wasn't there.
Do you know where he was at 5 o'clock?
No, I have no idea.
Do you know if he was conducting Illumina business?
I have no idea.
Do you know if he was at the library doing research?
He had gone. He had left for the day.
You have no idea where he was or why he was gone.
I inquired of one of the other employees or several of the other employees. Some of my former students worked there. I asked them where Tony was. They say he left for the day.
You don't know where he was or where he went, do you?
No.
Now, you testified that at some point in time, John Stulpnagel talked to you about Tony Zarnik's health issues?
Yes.
When did Dr. Stulpnagel talk to you about Tony Zarnik's health issues?
Actually, it was exactly the day that we were just talking about, where he wasn't at his desk. I went to John. I think I was going to John with John to dinner and some other people, and I said, "You know, John, I say the comments I did before. He's not behaving the way somebody who would be really engaged in a startup company should be behaving and setting an example for his staff." And actually, when John raised the issue of health issues, he said it in a very, in Tony's defense. What he said was, he said, "You know, we have to cut him some slack because he's experiencing some health issues." So that was the context in which John raised that issue, and I didn't want to pry any further because it was clear that John was simply at that point on the verge of almost breaching confidentiality, that he didn't want to tell me that, but because I raised the issue of Tony's commitment to the company, that John was sort of, you know, hold back, give him a chance.
So you raised the issue about Tony's commitment to the company. And in response, Dr. Stulpnagel told you Tony has some health issues.
Dr. Stulpnagel mentioned it in the context of trying to explain why maybe he had not been as committed to the company because of some personal health issues that he had been experiencing.
I want to be sure I understand. His raising the issue of health issues was in response to you saying that you thought Dr. Zarnik lacked some commitment?
That's correct.
When Dr. Stulpnagel raised the issue of Tony Zarnik's health issues, was Tony Zarnik still chief scientific officer of Illumina?
I don't believe he was at that point.
When was he replaced as chief scientific officer?
I'm estimating sort of the end of 99.
If I were to tell you that the evidence so far has suggested it was in March of 2000, would you quarrel with that?
No.
Therefore, if you had your discussion with Dr. Stulpnagel about health issues in January or February, it would have been while Dr. Zarnik still was chief science officer.
Okay.
You have no quarrel with that, do you?
No. We're talking about a period of months that was more than 2 years ago, so give or take a few months, that's fine.
You told the jury during direct examination that yesterday, on the plane ride flying here, is the first time you heard anything or knew anything about Dr. Zarnik's depression.
Objection. Asked and answered.
Cross-examination. Overruled. You may answer.
Yes, that's correct.
You testified that's the first time you heard that word, depression, associated with Dr. Zarnik?
That's correct.
Look at Exhibit 315, please. You recall that this was an email you received from Dr. Zarnik on or about August 25th?
And when we were going...
Is that right, sir?
Yes, that's correct.
You recall receiving this email?
Yes, I do.
And you'll note that Dr. Zarnik does use the word depression in describing the circumstances?
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
It's right there in black and white.
Does that refresh your recollection, sir, in terms of whether you heard the word depression before?
As I said, I'm not sure if I even got this far down in the paragraph because this was a letter that was drawing into question a topic that I was intimately familiar with, and that was decoding. And that issue was not one of concern because it had been discussed at every scientific advisory board meeting. As the inventor of the technology, I was familiar with the decoding issue. As a board member, we were inundated with data on this particular topic of decoding, so it was not an issue.
Tell the jury where in this email you stopped reading.
I think probably after the first paragraph. I may have scanned the rest of the email. I'm a busy person. I did not give much credence to this at this point. I knew this was coming from an employee who we had already discussed a severance package with.
Excuse me for a minute. I'm trying to see where you believe you stopped reading.
I believe I stopped reading at the end of the first paragraph, the word yourself.
Where he talks about coding?
Where he talks about decoding. And then, if you want to avoid being part of a drcoop.com debacle.
It's your testimony you stopped reading and you didn't read the second paragraph of this email?
My testimony is I do not recall having seen the word depression associated with Dr. Zarnik before yesterday on the airplane. It certainly was never mentioned orally by any member of the Illumina staff, and the fact that it's here, I may have seen it, but since it was coming from Dr. Zarnik, I probably did not give much credence to it at this particular point.
Okay. Now, you say you were the chair of the Scientific Advisory Board.
That's correct.
Have you been the chair of the Scientific Advisory Board the entire time the SAB has been in existence?
Yes, I have.
What are your responsibilities, sir, as chair of the Scientific Advisory Board?
My responsibilities were at the outset to select the people who were involved, the people who would be asked to serve on the Scientific Advisory Board, so I suggested several names. The names of other people were suggested to me, and I talked with those people and agreed that they'd be interesting, worthwhile people to have on the SAB. And then to sort of convene in a very pro forma way. The meetings are very informal, so sort of call them to order and then make sure that all the appropriate discussion got out that should get out.
So is it your testimony that after helping build the Scientific Advisory Board, helping decide who would be on the board, your responsibilities as chair have been limited to starting the meeting and making sure the discussion took place?
No. To also discuss in concert with the person who is in charge of the scientific officer or person in charge of research at Illumina to help set the agenda for the meeting. So, yeah.
Would you agree, sir, that one of the purposes of a scientific advisory board is to discuss scientific problems and scientific challenges being faced by a company?
Absolutely.
Now, with respect to the January 2000 meeting of the SAB, which you testified to, this was the one where the agenda, you say, was left for you at the hotel desk that day?
That evening. The evening before.
Evening before meeting?
Yes.
Isn't it true, sir, with respect to that agenda, for that Scientific Advisory Board meeting, that Dr. Zarnik had prepared an initial agenda and then had to revise it?
That may be. I don't recall.
In fact, isn't it true that Dr. Zarnik came to you and told you that he had placed as agenda items on that January 2000 SAB that he had placed as agenda items a discussion of scientific problems and scientific challenges facing Illumina?
I don't believe that's correct.
Are you sure? You were just not sure.
For purposes of making sure that I don't say anything that's incorrect, I'd say I'm not sure.
I'll try to refresh your recollection. Do you recall Dr. Zarnik coming to you and saying that he had been instructed by John Stulpnagel or Mark Chi to delete references on the Scientific Advisory Board agenda because they did not want to talk about scientific problems or challenges at the—
If they had said that, I would have picked up the phone and called both of them and screamed as loudly as I possibly could if that were the case.
Because that would be wrong to do, wouldn't it?
That would absolutely be wrong.
Because the purpose of an SAB is to have an open and frank discussion about scientific problems and scientific challenges.
Yes.
Now, you are also a member of the Illumina's board of directors.
Yes, I am.
Have you been a board member the entire time you've been with the company?
Yes.
Have you ever been chairman of the board?
No, I have not.
Have you attended regular meetings of the Illumina board of directors?
I've attended all but one meeting.
Isn't it true, sir, you typically received your agenda for the Illumina Board of Director meetings either the day of the meeting or the night before?
That's correct.
In fact, very often the board packet for the discussion at the Illumina Board of Directors meeting is waiting for you at the table when you walk into a board meeting. True?
It is a very well-prepared document of extensive length that enables you to flip through and familiarize yourself with all the things that are going to happen at the meeting.
Well, talking about timing, isn't it true that most often for the board of director meeting, the board of directors of Illumina, the board packet agenda, is waiting for you to see for the first time at the meeting?
No, it's not at the meeting. It's always delivered to my office several days in advance.
Has it ever been the case where the board packet was waiting for you at the meeting?
One time, and that time I was out of the office for an extended period of time, and there was no way for the package to have been mailed to me so I could have received it ahead of time.
There were other times when you received the agenda for the director's meeting the day before the meeting, true?
On a couple of occasions it arrived the day before, yes.
And the agenda for the SAB meeting that Dr. Zarnik put together for January of 2000, you also found the day before the meeting?
Yes, one piece of paper.
It was the first opportunity you had to review it. It was the night before the meeting?
Yes.
Since it was only one paper, it was, I take it, a short review?
It was really nothing to look at, unfortunately.
It was a short review?
It was simply a list of items for discussion. That was it. whereas the board packet was a substantive thing where I can flip through on the plane and see everything and make notes. Got a long plane ride, so I have the opportunity to really look at the documentation ahead of time and highlight those areas that I'm particularly interested in focusing on.
I take it from your testimony that you believe that the SAB meetings are important.
I believe they are important, and they serve an important role for the company, yes.
Do you know whether John Stuepnagel, when he was acting president of the company, thought that the SAB meetings were important?
Objection, relevance, foundation.
Sustained.
Isn't it true, Dr. Walt, John Stuepnagel told you he thought the SAB meetings were not very important?
Objection, relevance, hearsay.
Your Honor, he's being criticized allegedly for not conducting himself properly at SAB meetings. I want to establish Dr. Stuepnagel didn't think they were very important.
Sustained.
How often were the SAB meetings held?
Twice a year.
You testified you saw three meetings that were conducted by Dr. Zarnik?
That's correct.
Do you recall the approximate dates?
I really don't. They were spaced roughly every 6 to 8 months.
The last one you saw was the January 2000 meeting?
Yes.
How many SAB meetings have been held at Illumina after that meeting, January of 2000?
Three meetings.
Can you tell me approximately when those meetings were, sir?
I would think probably last December, and then probably 6 months before that, and then 6 months before that. I know there was a delay after David Barker arrived in holding the first meeting, so it could be that two meetings have been held. We have another one coming up next month.
I was going to ask you that. After this January 2000 board meeting, where you were critical of Dr. Zarnik's performance, when is the next time Illumina even had an SAB meeting after that?
David Barker came on board, and then it took a bit of time before he scheduled the next SAB meeting because he was really coming up to speed. And we had discussed this at length, and he really wanted to have certain people in place and certain goals met before we had an SAB meeting to make it particularly effective. So I would say it was probably 10 months after. It was probably like October, maybe, of 2000.
10 months after the January 2000 meeting?
That's probably right. I go to Illumina 8 times a year. We have 6 board meetings and 2 SAB meetings. And it would probably be better for everyone if you just said when the dates were, because 8 meetings a year, they get kind of confusing. I remember specific board meetings and what was talked about, but in terms of dates, they're every 2 months, so that's a pretty easy thing to remember. For SAB meetings, they are not scheduled as regularly.
And you remember the reason why the first SAB meeting under David Barker, why it took so long to schedule, was that Dr. Barker needed to get up to speed on the science.
He needed to get up to speed, and then we had some serious scheduling issues when everybody could be there, and he insisted that everybody on the SAB be available for the first meeting that he was going to be in attendance at.
Now, you testified about that April 1999 board meeting. You deny that Jay Flatley said to the board something to the effect that Dr. Zarnik doesn't know it yet, but he's going to be given goals that cannot be met.
I emphatically deny it. That is not true.
You do admit that shortly after that meeting, you contacted Tony Zarnik.
Yes, within a day or two of my returning to the university.
The purpose of you contacting Dr. Zarnik was to communicate a severance offer?
That's correct.
Isn't it true, sir, you tried to convince Dr. Zarnik that he should take the severance?
Yeah, I felt that it was an extremely equitable offer.
You tried to convince him it was in his best interests to take the offer, true?
You know, I really can't infer what his best interests were. I was presenting what the board had authorized me to present, and I had again volunteered as a friend to present this in a way that I thought was going to be non-confrontational, that was an open and honest discussion. And that when Tony heard from me, that I felt this was as equitable an offer that could be possibly made under the circumstances. I thought that he would respond positively to that and at least compromise in some way over his position.
As his friend, did you try to suggest to him why it might make sense for him to take the settlement offer?
The only thing that, well, yeah. What I said to him was that I felt that I did not think that any action that he would possibly take by refusing to do this, it was simply going to make protracted negotiations. He clearly was disengaged from the company. It was evident that he was not interested in the company and directing the scientific staff of the company at that point. and it really was in the best interests of the company to sever its relationship with Dr. Zarnik, and vice versa. For Dr. Zarnik to sever his relationship with the company and move on with his life and try and reestablish his professional career.
Did you tell him you thought he should take a severance offer?
I told him I thought that the 9-month salary, a 9-month stock deal, was very fair and that it was a very good package.
Dr. Walt, did you ever recommend that Dr. Zarnik be replaced as chief science officer?
No, I did not.
Is there anything you saw or heard or observed that ever made you recommend any discipline be taken against Dr. Zarnik?
I never recommended any discipline to be taken against him. No, it wasn't my role.
Did I hear correctly, did you say you never, ever were told that Dr. Zarnik made a claim of discrimination against the company?
What I said was, as of the April and probably June board meetings of 2000, that issue was never raised.
It was never raised in April or June of 2000 at the board meetings?
That's correct.
Didn't Jay Flatley inform the board that Dr. Zarnik had filed a formal charge of discrimination with the state government?
I don't recall.
Did Jay Flatley ever tell you he was going to conduct any investigation into any allegations of discrimination?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Did Jay Flatley ever tell you that he was going to order or authorize the company to investigate the charge of discrimination?
Not that I recall.
When is the first time you heard that Dr. Zarnik was claiming discrimination?
Sometime later. Certainly after April of 2000. It may have been at the June meeting, or it could have been at a subsequent board meeting, but somewhere in that time frame.
When was the next meeting after June? Next board of directors?
It was probably August.
August of 2000?
Yeah.
Dr. Walt, when you were talking to Tony Zarnik in April of 2000 about the severance package, didn't Dr. Zarnik tell you he wanted to stay at Illumina?
Yes, he did.
And you testified that as of June of 2000, at the June board meeting, Jay Flatley... As of the June 2000 board meeting, it was clear to you that Tony Zarnik was going to stay at Illumina?
That's correct.
Did Jay Flatley tell you that the goals that were eventually assigned to Dr. Zarnik, that Dr. Zarnik had agreed to those goals?
He said that the two of them had sat down and agreed to some short-term and longer-term goals, yes. In fact, he told me before that board meeting, because I'd flying in the night before, it's 3 hours later for me, so I would tend to come to Illumina, do a little snooping around in the morning and talking to people how things were going, and Jay took me aside and said Tony and he had had a productive discussion about goal setting and that... So we talked about this. He just mentioned that before the board meeting to me and then reiterated that at the board meeting later in the day.
Which board meeting?
The June board meeting.
If we could put up 227, please. These are the goals, Dr. Walt, that you believe were agreed to by...
I have no...
Jay Flatley and Tony Zarnik.
Objection, Foundation.
I have no knowledge of this. The first time I saw it was in the room right before my testimony.
I see. Without specifically knowing what the goals were, what you knew was that after June of 2000, Tony Zarnik sat down with Jay Flatley. They had a productive meeting, and they agreed to goals.
I did not say they had a productive meeting. I said that Jay Flatley and Tony had sat down and agreed to goals. It was your word. Productive was your word.
I believe you said that, sir, but the record will reflect what you say. You were asked some questions about these goals. Let me ask you...
Sure.
Speaking about binary oligo encoding, the 30-day goal is experimental proof of concept of binary oligo encoding with 2^4 codes. How much is that, sir?
16.
60-day goal, 2^8 power. How many would that be?
256.
And the 90-day goal, 2^12 power?
Wait, I'm sorry. 2^8 is 512. 512, sorry. 2^12.
Do you want to use the board?
You are asking me about 2^12?
No, 2^8.
2^8 is 512. I'm sorry.
I thought it's 256.
It's 256. I was right the first time. 2^8 is 256.
And the 90-day goal, 2^12, how many codes is that, sir?
2^12 is 4,000.
A little over 4,000, right?
A little over 4,000.
Assuming, sir, these goals were given to Dr. Zarnik on May 19th, this was a couple of months before the roadshow, what decoding experiments were going on at Illumina at that time?
I think at that point they were closing in on about 1,000 codes.
What do you base that on?
Are you asking about the technology that's based on?
What experiments suggest to you they were closing in on 1,000 codes?
I recall that, just from all the meetings that we had, we were... For 2000, we were in the range of... Our goal for the year 2000 was on the order of about 1,000 codes.
Company's goal for the year 2000 was 1,000 codes?
Something on that order, yes.
The entire company goal?
The goal to have about 1,000 qualified codes, yes.
Decoding is critical for the success of Illumina. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
It's fundamental to your technology.
That's right.
When was the 16-bead experiment conducted at Illumina?
The 16-bead experiment was done fairly early on, say probably in very early 99, maybe even toward the end of 98.
How many scientists were working on the 16-bead experiment?
The 16? Probably 3 or 4.
By the way, when you were doing the research at Tufts University, did you do any research in decoding? Did you conduct any experiments?
We actually had a different way of doing coding. We did something called encoding, which involves putting beads into beads rather than decoding, which is to figure out what sequence is on the beads after you've already put them into an array. So it's a complementary process, but yes.
Something different than decoding.
Something different than decoding, yes.
Going back to Illumina's coding efforts, you described several scientists working on the 16-bead experiment. Do you recall the 128-bead experiment at Illumina?
Yes.
How long did Illumina work on the 128-bead experiment?
That probably took 4 to 6 months.
How many scientists at Illumina worked on the 128 decoding experiment?
I would think somewhere around 4 to 6 scientists, but that's just a guess. I know, I really wasn't... I'm not a day-to-day person. I'm a director. We were presented with results as opposed to managing the individuals. We do things, we're ramping up.
I thought when we showed you that email Dr. Zarnik sent you in August, you said you didn't need to read it carefully because you knew all about decoding.
Objection, argumentative.
Sustained.
Are you familiar with an experiment called 768 decoding experiment?
Yes.
What was the purpose of the 768 decoding experiment?
Actually, the purpose of all the increasing numbers is simply to demonstrate that one could put more and more DNA sequences on the end of the optical fiber bundle that I described before. So, as you go from 16 to 128 to 768 to 1,536, you have the ability to put more and more complexity and do more tests per fiber than you would do with smaller numbers. So the purpose of all these experiments we were going through, it gave the company increasing capability to do DNA genetic testing.
What's the significance of 768 when you talk about the 768 decoding experiment? What does that number mean?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that question.
You know the experiment was called the 768 decoding experiment.
Yes, it was the number of distinct codes, if that's what you're getting at. The number of distinct codes or sequences of DNA that could be connected or decoded and subsequently analyzed on the end of a fiber.
So was the purpose of the 768 decoding experiment to see whether, through experimental proof and principle, whether Illumina could decode up to 768 different codes?
Yes, that's correct.
When were these experiments conducted to determine whether Illumina could decode 768 codes?
It was in the time frame that we're talking about, sort of that middle of 2000, early to middle of 2000 time frame.
Didn't those experiments, sir, begin in January of 2000?
If you say so. I mean, again, that's about the time. I wouldn't be surprised if that's when they began.
They were continuing at least through the roadshow. That is July of 2000, correct?
I think they probably had already done the proof of concept, proof of principle on the 768 at that point.
Sir, how long did the 768 decoding experiments continue? To what date?
I really don't know.
Do you have any estimate at all for the jury?
Well, I know that it got to 1536 not long after that period, so the 768 was sort of an interim milestone. It was a critical path, but it wasn't... I really don't know.
Can you give me your best estimate, please, of the entire duration, how long Illumina was working on various versions of the 768 decoding code?
It would be a guess.
Would you agree it was at least 6 months?
I would say 6 months sounds about right.
How many Illumina scientists were working on the experiment to determine whether Illumina could decode 768 different...
I have no idea.
Could you give me any estimate at all?
I would say it would be an effort of 6 to 8 people, approximately.
Now, when you were asked about these codes, rather, these goals, on direct examination, you gave a little discussion on the board about the 1-year goal for binary oligo encoding. Do you remember that?
That's correct.
You talked about what it was to make a library of tenmers.
Yes, that's correct.
That's what you demonstrated up on the board, right?
That's correct.
You only talked about what it took to make a library.
That's correct.
What about the rest of this goal, where it says to make and decode an array of all tenmers? That goal was more than just to make that library you described, wasn't it?
Well...
Yes?
Objection.
Let me withdraw the question. Isn't it true, Dr. Walt, that your goal that you started to talk about was more than just make a library? It was also to decode the array?
I think you're leaving out a key piece of information here, and that is when one sets scientific goals, and I do with my students all the time, you set short-term goals and you set long-term goals. What it says right there, again, I haven't seen this, but what it says is compose project plan and budget. This is under 30-day goal. Show experimental proof of context of binary oligo encoding with 2 to the... I can't read the number now, but 2 to the 4th, 16 codes. So if that particular experiment does not work, at least somebody has done the experiment, demonstrated the proof of concept will not work, and then you move on and set other goals.
Your Honor, I object and move to strike. I'm asking about the year goal.
Your Honor, he's entitled to complete his answer. That's a continuum of a single goal. The complete and...
Motion to strike denied. You may complete your answer.
So, in setting up and designing scientific experiments, one measures progress by the initial goals. Putting something down like this as a 1-year goal, the assumption, my assumption here, is that every one of those goals, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, there will be an evaluation of the progress that was taking place on each of those previous goals to make sure that the technology was capable of working.
You talked about experimental proof of concept. The 768 decoding experiment that the several scientists were working on, that's the same type of experiment. That's an experiment, a proof-of-concept experiment?
The 768 was beyond proof-of-concept.
Is it your testimony that the 768 decoding experiment was not a proof-of-concept experiment?
I would say the 768 probably would have been in that, one-year goal or beyond that sort of time frame.
Let me ask it in these terms. Was the 768 decoding experiment designed to be able to illustrate that Illumina could decode 768 different codes or to prove experimental proof of concept that suggested that the company could do so?
I don't think it was either one of those.
What was it?
I think it was at that point. It was at the stage where it was clear that the company was going to be able to decode 768 different codes, and it was really just putting in the resources to get that accomplished.
Are you aware, Dr. Walt, that Illumina's first 768 decoding experiment didn't work?
I wouldn't be surprised.
That it failed?
I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, without getting into too many technical details, there was a selection process that went on. That the way that the codes were selected is maybe 4,000 different codes were made, and then the best 768 were selected from those 4,000 to pick which ones would work the most efficiently.
Do you know, after the first 768 decoding experiment failed, when Illumina started the second 768 decoding experiment?
No. As I mentioned, I'm not involved in the day-to-day operations of the company.
I want to again focus on this year goal, ask you a specific question. Isn't it true that that year goal is asking Dr. Zarnik, in addition to making the library which you described, to actually make and decode the array of all tenmers?
Objection, lacks foundation, and he's not reading the entire goal.
Can you see the entire goal?
Make a combinatorial library of all tenmers. So that sounds actually to me like a very reasonable goal in the context of the 90-day goal.
Isn't it true, sir? That goal involved not only making the library that you described on that board, but also doing decoding.
Well, maybe making a library with all the resources that Illumina. What it meant was Tony had to go down the hall and tell somebody he wanted a split and mixed synthesis of all tenmers. And somebody actually would have done that for him and given him a bottle that contained all of those materials, probably within a couple of weeks. He then had to demonstrate that he could perform the binary decoding. And I really need to interject something here. There's a very important piece of information that is missing from your questioning.
Your Honor, I prefer he answer the questions.
You have to just answer the questions, Dr. Walt.
Okay.
I want to clarify one point, Dr. Walt. When you were going through the examination by Miss Espinosa, and you got up and made your talk about making the library of Tenmers, and this is something you claim the computer could do.
The computer could design them, but the synthesis had to be done by the technical staff.
Isn't it true you were describing only the first sentence of this year goal? You were describing what it took to make a combinatorial library.
But
isn't it true, sir?
You are talking about the one-year goal. Make a combinatorial library of all Tenmers, yes. So the one-year goal of all Tenmers that can be decoded using the binary coding scheme, that I contend can be done in a week or two.
You were talking about the first sentence.
That's correct.
The rest of that goal involved actual decoding, is that correct?
That's correct.
By the way, did you read Dr. David Barker's deposition testimony when you were flying in on the plane today?
No, I did not. I only had the testimony where my name was mentioned.
How about Dr. Kevin Gunderson? Did you read his deposition?
No, I did not.
Now, on the roadshow, and for the record, could you describe for the jury what a roadshow is?
A roadshow is where the executives of the company and the executives of the company go to various investment firms, banks, financial institutions, and give a presentation about the technology that the company has. What the market opportunities are, who the people that are associated with the company are, and really just describe the technology and what the opportunities are. And there is sort of a range of stock price that's put on. It's called a cover price, which ranges in value. And what it's designed to do is get people to subscribe to buy the stock at the time that it's introduced on the stock market.
And you attended how many sessions?
One meeting.
And when you heard the roadshow presentation, did they make any representations that decoding works?
You know, I heard the presentation from Jay. I suspect that what was described was, here is how we do it. I don't think anything was described with respect to how many.
I didn't say how many. Was it described that the concept of decoding works?
You know, the decoding concept I don't believe was even discussed. I don't believe the decoding was discussed. I think it was simply stated that what we do is we put the beads randomly into the array and then decode them by a process that we've developed.
So was the word decode and code used in any way, shape, or form?
I'm sure it was.
Again, the technology is pretty much worthless if the decode doesn't work. Agreed?
No, because as I mentioned, my laboratory develops encoding approaches that could have been used as well.
As far as what Illumina is trying to do with his technology, decoding is essential.
No, what I said is correct. There are alternatives. So what Illumina is doing is allowing the technology to proceed. The decoding, that approach that they are taking, works well, and there was no reason to not pursue it.
How many different codes or bead types can Illumina decode today?
You know, I'm not sure how many at the research stage, but there's certainly 1536, and I believe that the ultimate goal is 2,000, but that's sort of as many as they need.
Let me ask you a quick question about something called the Onos. Are you familiar with the Onos?
Yes, I developed the technology in my lab.
This is outside the scope of direct.
This is my only opportunity to take him. We're taking him out of order.
Call him as your witness on this?
Simple question, Dr. Walt. Do you have any concerns or do you feel that Illumina has not developed the Onos the way it should have?
I think it's generally recognized within the company that the Onos has not been developed to the extent that it should, and there are discussions that are going on to rectify that with respect to getting that technology addressed in a very aggressive way.
Who is working on the Onos project today?
Today, I believe there are only 3 people working on that project.
And their names, please?
I don't know.
Do you know any of them?
I don't recall who they are, no.
Put up Exhibit 315 again. Did you ever respond to this email?
Asked and answered, Your Honor.
But it's cross-examination.
I don't believe I did.
Did you say you didn't respond to this email because you thought it was just an issue that was personal to Tony Czarnik?
What I think I said was I thought this was paranoia on his part, and that was struck from the record, but I'll use it again because that's precisely what this reads as.
Did you ever, where the email says, Jay's pronouncement at the April board meeting that I'd described his bout with depression, that he didn't believe me, and he was about to assign me goals that couldn't be met, did you ever send another email to Dr. Czarnik, or a phone call, or a memo, or any response at all denying those accusations?
Foundation? Object. The question is argumentative, given the witness's prior testimony that he doesn't have any recollection of having seen this. So I think given that prior testimony, the inquiry is argumentative.
The question is, what portion of this?
Did you ever send anything to Dr. Czarnik, or even telephone him, or in any way, shape, or form, respond to his, Dr. Czarnik's, accusation that Jay Flatley had said some things at the April board meeting?
Sustained. He never said he read that.
If I can clarify, did you not read? Did you stop reading altogether? Or did you skim the rest of it? I'm not sure.
Asked and answered.
Overruled. You may answer.
What I said is, I believe I stopped reading after the first paragraph.
You didn't even skim the second paragraph.
I don't recall having done that, no.
You take your duties as a board member seriously, don't you, sir?
Absolutely.
You take your role as chair of the advisory board seriously, don't you?
Absolutely. Very seriously.
Having seen the first paragraph of this email that talked about coding, you didn't even bother to read the second paragraph to see whether Dr. Czarnik would say anything further on this subject?
Objection. Argumentative.
Sustained.
If you took your responsibilities seriously as a board member and as an SAB chair, when you saw the first paragraph that dealt with decoding, weren't you interested in what the rest of the email said?
Same objection. Argumentative.
Sustained.
In your view, Dr. Walt, how many times should an experiment be successfully repeated before the results are presented publicly?
Objection. Lacks foundation. Vague.
Calls for an expert opinion, and he hasn't been designated as an expert. Sustained.
Dr. Walt, you said you currently have 1,400,000 shares of Illumina stock.
That's correct.
At the time of the roadshow, how many shares of Illumina stock did you own?
Exactly the same number, except for 10,000 shares that I earned last year by serving on the board of directors.
So again, you own roughly 1.4 million shares during the roadshow. Is that right?
That's correct.
What about as of the date of this Exhibit 315, as of August 25th, 2000? How many shares of Illumina stock did you own that day?
I've owned the same number of shares pretty much from day one. That was almost stable. I put some money into the company a little bit earlier on just to buy a few extra shares, but about the same number.
And when you received this email from Dr. Czarnik on August 25th of 2000, when he encouraged you to dig into coding, what was the share price approximately of the 1.4 million shares of stock that you owned?
Objection. Foundation. Relevance.
Do you know what the share price was on that date, Doctor?
It would be a guess.
Sustained.
Can you give me an estimate at all?
Objection. Asked and answered. The witness has indicated it will be a guess.
He said it would be a guess. Sustained.
What about on the day the company went public, at the IPO? What was the share price on that day?
Objection. Relevance.
Didn't we argue it earlier on and the objection was overruled?
Yes.
Overruled. You may answer.
The stock was introduced at a price of $16 per share.
$16 per share at the opening bell?
That was the price that everyone purchased it at. At the opening bell, I think it ended up going out at about $29.
$29 a share?
Uh-huh.
You had 1.4 million shares.
Today it's about 5, and I haven't sold any shares.
So what is the current value of the shares of stock that you do own on today's market, at today's price?
I'm not sure what relevance that has to the reason I'm here is because my integrity is being questioned.
Dr. Walt, you just have to answer the question. I decide if it's relevant or not.
Okay. Sorry.
We can do the math, counsel. You've got the numbers.
I want to be sure we're all on the same page. You sit here today testifying you own 1.4 million shares, and the shares are priced at around $5 a share?
And I haven't sold any shares.
Is that correct, sir?
That's correct.
So, in the open market, your shares of stock, as you sit here today testifying, have market value of around $7 million.
I couldn't sell them if I wanted to.
You can answer the question, please.
We can just take judicial notice of what 5 times 1.4 million is, counsel.
Fair enough. No further questions.
Any questions on redirect?
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead.